Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
It's hard to have better results than that at pick number 9 in the NFL draft. Is it the luckiest spot in the draft? Well, just outside of desperation zone of the top 5 lies a slot that has produced some of the most feared legends ever to put on pads. But it's not just about defense. Number 9 is where you find the GOAT of offensive linemen, John Hanna, the Iron Man, and Bruce Matthews, a legend in his own right. And when you pick at 9, you aren't just drafting a starter, you're drafting a Hall of Famer, most possibly. And in this episode, we're counting down the greatest number at 9 ever in NFL draft history, along with some of the busts, and maybe even some that you might want to redraft. But we have our guest, Ed Cleese, joining us once again. Welcome to the Pigpen. You're on Pigskin Dispatch's 32-day drive of all the NFL first-round slots. If you are joining us today, when we're releasing this, you are 9 days from the NFL draft in 2026 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we are talking about our countdown for the last 20-some days. Ed Cleese is joining me once again. We are at pick number 9, talking about the legends of the first 90 drafts that have been drafted in the selection. Ed, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren, how are you today?
I am doing super. You know, we are a little more than a week away from the draft now, and we've got some great players. We're in the top 10, baby, and it's
in the top 10. We're the home stretch. Here we go.
Yeah, that's for sure. So what's your overall overview of the number 9 pick in history?
Sure. Like we've been talking about recently, we saw a change at the 13th pick, and it's kind of been a consistent since then. The 9th pick is also pretty strong. I actually don't think it's quite as strong as the last couple we've done. But it's good. I mean, it's good. There's some good names here. Some historic names here. Recently, too early to tell, but like Rome Odunze, Jalen Carter, Ed Oliver, Mike McGlinchey, these are all like important players on their teams right now. Pat Surtain is the one that's really on his way. He's the one guy that's been taken in like the last dozen years that looks like someday we'll be talking about him in top 5 conversation. He's a phenomenal player. He's great. There was one big bust taken somewhat recently. That would have been John Ross, taken by the Bengals in 2017, receiver. He was not in the league last year, so I think his career is probably over. Only caught 63 passes in those 6 years. So that's a recent bust. And if we're going to kind of stay negative for a while, there's been a number of other busts, including, Darren, what might be when we the definition of the word bust in every possible way. But first we'll start with some others. Dee Milner was taken in 2013 by the Jets. He only had 13 career starts in the defensive backfield. That's very disappointing, of course. Mm-hmm. Touchdown Tommy Vardell, if you remember him, the kind of big burly running back, was taken by the Browns in 1992. Touchdown Tommy in the NFL, not so much. He only scored 18 touchdowns in 8 years in the NFL. Only had 1 year over 400 yards rushing. Sometimes being big and burly just isn't enough. You got to have some scoot to you, and I don't think Tommy had much scoot. Sammy Smith was another running back taken in 1989. He had two by the Dolphins. He had two so-so seasons, and then he was done. And your Steelers took a gentleman named John Reinstra in 1986. He was an offensive guard. He only made 27 starts in 5 years. And to me, that position, like interior offensive line, man, if you're going to roll the dice and take an interior offensive lineman in the top 10 of the draft, he better be like legendary good. Because even if he's just good, that's probably not good enough to take a guard that high. So you need to be great. And he was not. So that's a real bust pick. But nothing compares to the guy that was taken the year before him. And this is probably a guy you don't remember, because I don't know a lot of people would. And I think people in Philadelphia have done everything they can do to forget. And for this, Darren, I actually just have to read a little something verbatim to you.
Okay.
It's an offensive lineman taken in 1985 by the Eagles. His name was Kevin Allen. I believe he was from Indiana. Don't quote me on that. I forgot to write it down. And if he is, if he's not, then I very much apologize to all the Indiana fans out there, because this is almost like slander, what I'm about to read. So it says his career started against the New York Giants, a game where the Giants recorded 8 sacks. By midseason, Allen was relegated to special teams. During the offseason, Allen moved to the center position. Eagles coach Buddy Ryan thought so little of Allen that he once described him as someone who could be useful if you want someone to stand around and kill the grass. He looks like a USFL reject. In 2011, Deadspin ranked Allen the fourth worst NFL player of all time. Not draft pick, NFL player of all time. Noting,
jeez,
the 9th overall pick out of Indiana has a special way of blocking opposing pass rushers. He would lean his body forward, then fall down. And never had the Eagles had a combination of bad person, bad player that could match this guy. When Buddy Ryan was asked in an interview about him missing practice due to being treated at a local hospital for dehydration, he said, "You mean the general?" When asked about Allen's whereabouts, he said, "You know, we call him the general, don't you? For General Hospital."
Oh.
But it gets better, Darren. He only appeared for 4 games in his rookie year. He tried to make a comeback, but never did, never made a team. So he appeared in 4 games in his career.
Let's take a break for a moment to tell you about a new product so that you can take and put your football knowledge that we feed you each and every day to the test. It is the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. You're the quarterback. You call the shots, choose your play, grind it out with a run, pick up steady gains on a short pass, or risk it all with a long pass for a massive chunk of yardage. It isn't just a quiz. It's a march for glory. It's the Pigskin Trivia Drive. Remember, when the huddle's over, when you pick your play, the faster you answer, the more yards you gain. Hesitation is the enemy of the end zone. Keep those chains moving. Cross that yellow line to reset your downs and earn a critical audible. Stuck on a tough defensive look? Use those audibles to strip away 2 wrong answers and find your open receiver. Watch the play clock. You've got just 25 seconds to make the read. Take too long, and it's a 5-yard penalty for delay a game. It's game action. In this stadium, your brain is the engine, but the clock is the opponent. The mission is simple. Score as many touchdowns as possible in 5 minutes. And when the clock hits 0, your score hits the global leaderboard. Are you a bench warmer or a Hall of Famer? Step up to the line. Your drive starts now on pigskindispatch.com, the Trivia Drive. Don't let your football history knowledge go to waste. Try the Pigskin Trivia Drive on pigskindispatch.com. And now, let's get back into our program.
All right, well, let's bring in some better news of football, the more positive side of some of the legends that are here, and maybe your honorable mention, your top 5.
Yes, honorable mentions. John Henderson in 2002 by the Jags. That was a really good one. Fred Taylor, he was a real close to being in my top 5, drafted in 1998, also by the Jags. He was always steady. He's really high on some of those all-time lists, higher than you'd think. He only made 1 Pro Bowl. And that was kind of interesting. Lincoln Kennedy was an offensive tackle in 93. Richmond Webb was an offensive tackle in 1990. That one sticks out to me, the Richmond Webb, Darren, because he's really the only good draft pick the Dolphins made in the first round other than Marino in like a 15-year span. And so one of the reasons they couldn't build around Marino is because they failed so miserably in the draft. And that is one they got right. And it's probably the best player Marino ever played with. At least through the prime of his career, was Richmond Webb. He was a tough cut. And Gerald Riggs was a running back taken in the 80s. He had 11 – he had a really couple of nice years with the Falcons. He wound up with the Redskins, had a couple good years. In 91, he was like the 3rd running back for the Redskins on the Super Bowl team. But he scored 11 touchdowns that year, and then he scored 6 in the playoffs. So he had like 220 yards rushing that season or something, but he had like 17 touchdowns. So a good gig for him. And then a really, really sad one was Jerome Brown was taken by the Eagles in 1987. He was back-to-back first-team All-Pro, Darren. the seasons before he was killed in the offseason in a car wreck. He was an unbelievable player. He was on his way on this list for sure.
Yeah, tragic when that yes, happened.
For sure.
Really
for
sad sure. day.
For sure, yep.
All right, well, who do you have in your top five?
Top five. We're going to start in 2003. This one was this is weird to me because I remembered him, and then I was like, I almost didn't look him up because I couldn't remember him being that remarkable. And I was like, wait, I missed on this guy. And that would be Kevin Williams, a defensive tackle taken by the Vikings in 2003. Oh, yeah. He's on the all-decade team in the 2000s. Five first-team All-Pros and 11 of the 13 years he played in Minnesota, so he was a Viking. I wonder if he just suffered from being on a bunch of average teams.
Because they had him, he was a bookend. They had another guy that was like the same size and very productive. And I forget what
his name remember. Was. I can't remember. And for some reason,
they were a run stop. I mean, you couldn't run up the middle when those two guys were in.
Yeah, I just can't remember. I don't know why I needed the reminder with him, you know, but it was clear to me that he was very deserving of this list.
Yeah, most definitely. He was a big guy and a big time player.
Kevin Williams, that's also kind of a boring name. So maybe that's why.
Yeah, he needed a little bit of a nickname. His teammates should have gave him something, you know.
Right.
All right. Who do you have number four?
Number four. I hate talking about the Cowboys, but it's Tyron Smith, offensive tackle taken in 2011. He was out of the league last year, so I'm kind of assuming that his career is over. He was with the Jets in 2024, but he played all the other seasons in Dallas. Seven straight Pro Bowls, two first-team All-Pros. And then the reason I've got him as high as I do is when you're excellent at a premium position. So he's the left tackle. He's one of the best in the league for really a decade, you know, essentially. You're playing a top position. You're going against everybody's great edge rusher. You're more than holding your own. Those Cowboys offenses were very good throughout the 2010s. They opened up all kinds of space for Zeke and allowed Dak to have those big, big passing years. So they had some – we talked about Travis Frederick. We talked about Zach Martin. And now we're talking about Tyron Smith, all taken like in a succession by the Cowboys. Talk about home runs on the offensive line and how important that is and what it can do for your team.
Yeah, down in Jerry World, they know how to pick their offensive linemen. They always seem to have a really good offensive lineman and end up making the Pro Bowls, All Pros, and Canton. So, yeah, good selectioner.
Yep. And so we're going on to three, and I had two and three were like almost identical. And I just didn't know how to rank them. And then I just kind of flipped a coin, but I always want to have a reason. So I got a reason. So I've got Brian Urlacher at number three, linebacker taken by the Bears in 2000. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. And then I've got Luke Kuechly at number two, taken in 2012, linebacker for the Panthers. So both of these guys were middle linebackers. Both are massively affecting the games. Both have a gold jacket. Both are totally deserving. I'd say when you put them side by side, Urlacher wins the counting stats, like the volume stats, because he played longer. He did play five more years because Kuechly's career came to a screeching halt, as we know. They both had one defensive player of the year. There was more all pros for Kuechly. But ultimately, I just said, you know what? Just me watching these two guys, I always felt that Kuechly was maybe just a tad more impactful. And that's sort of a gut thing, just an observation, whatever. But I remember watching Kuechly and so fast, sideline to sideline. Not that Urlacher was slow. He certainly was not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just kind of flip a coin. You can probably reverse them, whatever. But I've got Kuechly just a tad ahead.
Yeah, I think they're neck and neck. You know, it'd be a photo finish if they were in a horse race between those two. But I think I'd almost give Urlacher the advantage because he's a little bit more old school, and he just had the look of. I mean, you don't want to meet up with him in a dark alley. You know, the bald head and you know, kind of menacing looking. Not that Kuechly's not, but yeah, I don't know. I'd probably take maybe Urlacher. I think he had a little bit bigger impact for his team.
Yeah, well, that's fair. Like I said, it could flip a coin either way. You're not going wrong if you're taking Urlacher or Kuechly with the number nine.
Yeah, I'd take either one at number nine. That's for sure. All right. So who did you end up having at number one?
This is easy. Number one for me, Darren. That is arguably the greatest interior offensive lineman of all time in the history of the NFL. That is Bruce Matthews, taken in 1983 offensive guard by the Oilers. And just, this is almost shocking. So he played 19 years in the NFL. He, the 1987 strike year is the only year he missed any games at all. So 18 out of 19 years, he played all of them. He made the Pro Bowl in at age 40 in Tennessee, because he was with the Oilers and he made the move to Tennessee. He made every start between 1988 and 2000. He made 14 straight Pro Bowls, 7 first-team All-Pros, a couple of second teams. But then this is really what sticks out to me, Darren. He made 14 straight All-Pros. What year do you think he was in? I'm sorry, 14 straight Pro Bowls and 7 straight All-Pros. What year do you think he was in when he made his first Pro Bowl?
Maybe year 2?
6.
Wow. Okay.
So what that tells me is we did not know what we were doing back in the early 80s when it came to judging offensive linemen. There's no way that he played 6 years in the NFL and then got really good. He was probably doing that the entire time. And at some point, somebody was like, you know what? If you remember, like the mid-80s, the Oilers were not good. That was like kind of a before moon.
But they had great offensive lines, because the Munchak was on that line with
them. They did, but they weren't good teams. And that was after Earl Campbell and those teams and Pastorini, and it was before Warren Moon. So they had like a little lull there at first. Maybe people were just not paying attention. I don't know. But there's no chance that he was not all pro level prior to actually being recognized. So in my opinion, this guy played 19 years in the NFL. He probably could have been Pro Bowl, all pro, you know, 17 times, you know, whatever it was, you know, it was,
could be.
Yeah. We're talking about a monster, a stalwart. It is hard, you know, because it's very difficult for you or I to sit here. If you said, hey, compare Bruce Matthews to Randall McDaniel or another great offensive guard from the 50s, what made him better? You know, we're not,
they didn't have next gen stats back then. You know,
yeah. You don't have next gen. So all you can kind of do is go off the hardware. And also the fact that the dude played every game for 19 years and kept getting recognized. So you're like, all right, maybe you're the best. And he's number one on my list for sure.
Yeah. When you're having the impact of a car collision, you know, 50, 60 times a game, every single play, you know, and you're lasting that long, that's some durability and some Iron Man spirit there. So yeah, definitely a great pick. Great family line too, you know, Clay Matthews Jr. They all come from that line. I believe Clay Matthews Sr. and Bruce Matthews are brothers.
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Great football.
Quite the lineage.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely. Well, we had, some Hall of Famers you talked about. You talked about Urlacher and Kuechly, who just made it this year, Bruce Matthews. We had a total of 5, before 1980, the era you're talking about, 1952, we had Hugh McElhaney, who just died a couple years ago, great San Francisco 49er halfback, played with them for many years. And another great halfback with the Baltimore Colts, Lenny Moore, was drafted in 1956 as a 9th overall pick at halfback. So great players there. Frank Trpucka, you remember Kelly Trpucka?
Yeah.
Frank Trpucka, as a quarterback, drafted in 1949, did not make the Hall of Fame, but had some very impactful games in the NFL and in the Canadian Football League, by the way. But we had a couple of interesting guys in the beginning of the draft. 1937, Ed Jankowski, Green Bay Packers Hall of Famer, Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame, not in a Pro Football Hall of Fame, but the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame, playing for back in those eras. And Andy Farkas was drafted the next year. I'm surprised you don't know this. He is rated as one of the top 90 Washington Redskins on their 70th anniversary in 2002. So
yep,
pretty good player there as well.
I'm familiar with Farkas, not Scott Farkas, the bully from A Christmas Story.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Maybe that's where they got the name.
I wonder if this bully, Farkas had yellow eyes.
Yeah. Until Ralphie had to beat him up.
Right.
But yeah, so that's some great players there. And we have a kind of an interesting draft fact of the day. You talked about Bruce Matthews This 1983 draft, it was a wild one, and I didn't realize it was happening because maybe we didn't have ESPN and everything else going on like we do now. But 1983 draft, tackle Bruce Matthews by the Houston Oilers. The Oilers traded down twice before picking Matthews in that draft. First, they sent the number two selection to the Rams in exchange for the number three choice and a fourth round picks in 83 and 84. The Rams then selected Eric Dickerson, who made the Hall of Fame. Houston dropped down again, sending the number three choice to the Seahawks in exchange for the number nine pick. And the Seahawks ended up taking running back Kurt Warner from Penn State, who was a great, not Kurt Warner, the quarterback with a K. This is Kurt with a C, who ended up having some good years for the Seahawks. So it was definitely was a great back for the Nittany Lions. So just kind of an interesting thing that the Houston drafted back. They, I guess they knew who they wanted and wanted Matthews and knew what a stud he was going to be. And he said, we can wait and we'll pick up some more draft capital by doing that too. So
that's either brilliance or really good luck.
yeah, probably a little bit of both, but interesting story all the same. So that takes us that, and I think that sort of wraps up our number nine pick here. We only have eight more to go, Ed, and you know, a week and a day, and we're at draft day.
Yes, sir. Well, I'll see you tomorrow, Darren. Looking forward to it.
Okay. See you tomorrow for number seven.
Eight.
Number eight.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.